Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Radio Tony. This is the Everyday Business Show, and I am here with Amir Michelle, who is an amazing real estate agent. And before we get on to our real estate talk today, I need to tell you just a little bit about Amir's story. So Amir is a second-generation investor, and Amir witnessed firsthand renovation secrets from the tender age of 10. And by 16, he'd immersed himself in developing an investor mindset. Pretty powerful for someone to learn those skills at such a wonderfully young age. Starting with just $5,000 and the benefit of training in financial planning at one of the big four Australian banks, Amir invested in regional New South Wales, Tasmania and Western Australia. And after consecutive years of a six-figure income and extending into a seven-figure profit from real estate, Amir became a real estate agent. And Amir now works purely as a buyer's agent and negotiates on behalf of buyers everywhere. Amir, welcome back to the show. Good morning. How are you?
Wonderful, Tony. Thank you so much for that wonderful, warm introduction. So I'm working as a buyer's agent, but also as a selling agent and a property manager.
Yes.
Where I used to work just as a buyer's agent, I'm now the full real estate agent, and I've got partners that do specific parts of real estate.
So that's quite a big portfolio to manage. And today we're actually going to talk about some of your early investments, what they looked like, and the process for you picking those particular properties. Now, we start in New South Wales, don't we?
Oh, yeah. I think that's probably the easiest, considering that I was living in Sydney and New South Wales was the around-the-block type of investments that I could make.
Amir, one of the keys to your investing was that you started in an area where you had a pretty good idea of the specs, which is kind of the property, what it was doing, who was buying what, and that's why it's a good idea to perhaps start within your local area, although I know lots of people diversify and buy all over the place, but for you that was a good choice, wasn't it?
It's funny you say that, Tony. If I was to look back at how I started, I mean, part of it is a bit of a comedy, to be honest. If I think of branded, my first investments were in units rather than houses.
Yes. Yes.
Mostly because I had a small deposit, so that was the only thing that I could afford in the metro area. The first one was a little bit of a disaster, you would say, if you were thinking of purely numbers. So
yes.
I lived in Randwick. I was renting in Randwick, and I've been renting in Randwick for several years. So I knew what streets were good. I knew what bus stops I wanted to be close to. But if you were with me on, let me just see if I can think of what day it was or what year it was even. It probably would have been around the late 90s.
Yes.
I'd say, yeah, 98, around 1998.
98, yes.
So that was my first start into actually putting my own money into property rather than just helping renovations that my parents were doing or painting walls, stripping carpets. I even had a time when I was, I think, between 16 and 17, where my part of the construction industry was to chip away at the little bits of mortar off old bricks so that they could be reused as secondhand bricks. Memory, I think it was 5 cents per brick, but it may have been 2 cents per brick in the olden days when 2 cents used to exist.
Yes, we don't have 2 cent pieces and 1 cent pieces anymore in Australia. Go straight to 5 cent pieces. But 1 cent a brick, Amir, goodness me.
I think it was 5 cents. I'd love to say that I was I valued myself to that top echelon and I was getting 5 cents a brick. Let's say that.
That's pretty cool. So that's a lot of bricks to make a little bit of money. I'm hoping the bricks didn't contribute to the first deposit you made. No. Okay, good. So you
No.
had a tiny deposit, but you were still able to invest in this block of units. What happened with that?
So, my first foray into what I guess a lot of people start off with is using the internet, using a search. So, I mean, look, have you ever used a Google search? Have you ever used a web browser search?
Yeah, and it's a bit hit and miss sometimes, isn't it?
I'd say that almost 100% of your listeners would have done the same thing. They would have used a web browser for one thing or another. But the smarter question isn't have you used it, but have you used it to buy a big ticket item and then taken that information from the web browser and try to monetize, try to actually turn all the information that's available on a search browser, on a web browser, into an investment problem.
Is that what you did?
That's what I've tried to do. That's where the disaster came in. So the first, so imagine this. If this is a young person, I'm approaching a real estate agent who's I'm approaching a real estate
with
agent.
your deposit.
Yeah. I'm approaching a real estate agent who's trying to sell a unit in Randwick. And obviously I'm interested, but I thought, okay, don't show that you're too interested. So don't show your whole hand. But I knew what my limit was. I knew where I could go up to. So I went in for the inspection. I paid for the strata report. I paid for the building and pest inspection. I got the reports back. So by that stage, 2 or 3 days had gone by and I make an offer in writing. So I send an email to the real estate agent who's selling it. And I tell them, okay, well, my partner and I are interested in buying this property. And this is the offer we'd like to make. I'm waiting because, you know, the rules, you're not supposed to call straight away. You're supposed to give them a little bit of time to think about it. So I waited till the next morning, the very next morning, and I rang the real estate agent up.
Right.
And the real estate agent said, we sent your offer to the owner and we also rang the other people that were interested in buying the property and they've offered 5,000 more than what you've offered. So they've bought the place. It's off the market now. I said, no, hold on. I can go further up. Let me offer 10. And they said, no, we're not interested in horse trading. What I found out later is that this is quite common in the real estate industry. If you make an offer on a property, then the real estate agent will call anybody who's ever been at the inspection and say, look, we already have a written offer at this value. If you don't want to miss out, make a higher bid. And so quite often the first bidder is the first bidder is the one that's used as the benchmark to get other people to either commit or walk away. And I learned that the hard way. We missed out. The second property that I that
you missed out.
The second property that I found within a couple of streets was also in Randwick, and it still had exactly the same things we were looking for, which was a two-bedroom unit that faced north or northeast, and it still ticked all the boxes. But this time, I learned something from my mistake. Instead of making an offer, I paid for the inspections, I paid for the strata report, made sure everything was ticking the boxes as far as knowing that if I committed to it, I wouldn't need to run away later. But my offer was a little bit higher than what I thought the place would fetch. And I did the opposite. I went to the real estate agent and I said, have you had any interest or have you had any offers on this unit already? And they disclosed that they had an offer of 400,000. So I thought to myself, okay, I know what's going to happen next. I'm going to make an offer. They're going to use my offer to shop around. So I made an offer of 410,500. Why 500 more? Because then the real estate agent could shop around and say, we've had an offer over 410. So if you're going to beat it, it has to be over, not 410, but over a mark that's over the 410. So I know that if somebody was going to bid 450, 460, I'm not interested anyway. But if they're going bid 411, they wouldn't get to 411. They'd have to beat me by at least 10,000 or 20,000. So I figured, okay, so now I'm making an offer. It's a fair value considering what calculations I made on really the preliminary learning expedition of what it is to buy property. But I knew that the strata was good. There's a payments going in to the strata, which is where the money is shared in a block of units to make sure that there's insurance, to make sure that the building is upkept, to make sure that there's enough money to paint the roof if it needs to be repainted or resealed for a water seal. Very important if you're going to have a block of units and you only own one of them. So I made the offer, and that $500 extra, maybe that was the kicker. Maybe that was the reason that I ended up buying that. But that came out okay for me. And being in Randwick, I estimated it's going to grow quite quickly, or at the very least grow. So I lived in it. It was the unit that I bought not just as a pure investment but a property to live in. Now, when we first moved in, right in front of the northern balcony was this massive tree. When I say massive, think of it this way. If you were to line up three cars back to back, front to tail, the shade of the tree was as big as three cars back to back. So it was a very significant tree. And think of where Randwick is on the map compared to the beautiful view of the city outline with the center point tower in the middle of the city. If by magic the tree would disappear, we would have a skyline view from our balcony to Sydney Harbour. Not harbour, but at least Centrepoint Tower and the city skyline.
A good view. Yes.
And usually the views increase the value of a property. Anyway, so I think I stayed there about 5 or 6 years. And one night there was a massive thunderstorm with a lightning bolt that happened to split the tree. Actually hit that tree, smacked bang in the middle, and that tree that was blocking our view evaporated. Force of nature, act of God. So here's the funny part. I went to the local real estate agents that were the experts in selling in Randwick and got three of them to come in and give me a quote on how much my property is worth. And every single one to a T valued it between 800 and 900,000. Now we bought this.
Awesome.
We bought this for 410 and 500. So yes. I'm thinking, wow, I've just doubled my money. And this is how I learned not to read the papers. Why? Because this is a beautiful view apartment. It has great views in summer. If we did inspections during summertime, people would see the city view. They'd see the beautiful sun-filled lounge room facing north, remember, and the bedrooms facing east. So all the aspects meant that in summertime you're going to get the best views. So, of course, I organized the little paint job, the walls to be repainted and the old carpet to be removed just to do some new flooring on there. One of the lucky bits, and I say lucky with a bit of jest, because sometimes you pick a job not for what you can earn but for what you can learn. And I think I read that in one of the property books, actually. But if you were to pick a job for what you can learn instead of what you can earn, at that stage when I was an investor of one property, I didn't need to know much about how to invest in property. I needed to learn how to renovate properties. So I found a job with a big Australian retailer. I'm not going to drop brand names, but Tony, this is going to seem like a bit of clickbait where you go like, just click on my profile on LinkedIn and check out my resume. No, I'm not doing it as clickbait, but I just didn't want to drop in different names of different companies I worked with. But let's say it's a big Australian retailer that retailed electrical goods and furniture. So if you were to buy a new oven, a new fridge, new appliances.
That's where you'd go.
Or even build a new kitchen, that's where you would go. So I found a job that could teach me how to renovate because they knew how to measure and refit a new kitchen and a new bathroom.
And those are the skills that you wanted to develop so that you could renovate in a professional manner. Ah, well, brilliance.
So Just from an appliances point of view, I could learn a little bit by going shopping and not spending my own money, but just seeing what's out there and finding out about the different strategies. So I did a very, very simple thing. And really, it's just a cosmetic makeover. But the little paint job and just pulling out the old carpet, putting in new vinyl floorboards that looked like real timber but weren't and were waterproof, just made the place so much more habitable, open. Carpet can really make a home luxurious yes. if you're paying for expensive carpet. But if it had the original condition carpet, then you're not really adding value. So the first thing what I did was I ripped up the carpet and cut it up into 100 pieces so they could fit into my bin once a week, and that way I could just throw it out with my normal rubbish. But apart from my back work, apart from actually putting in the hard yards, the sweat equity into the work,
yes,
I did have great luck with measuring, drawing up plans, working out what size each room was, and then cutting the pieces to fit. So I did learn a lot just from that one little renovation on what to do. Where I got burnt, and this is something that I'll always remember.
Yes.
My family, my friends, the newspapers, all the media were saying, as long as you buy in Sydney, you could never lose money. As long as you buy in the eastern suburbs, you can never lose money. As long as you, et cetera, et cetera. You know the story, don't you?
Yes, I do. Yes.
That's not true. So I put the property up for auction for a January auction. It was a gorgeous day. I think we had about 10 to 15 people show up for the auction. And we sold it through the auction campaign for under $500,000. How? Why? How did that happen?
Yeah, well, tell us, Amir.
So four things came together that I couldn't have predicted. The first one was that the government was about to change. So we had federal elections, meaning all of Australia was about to find out if they're going to have the same tax incentives for property next year as they were happy with last year.
Mm-hmm.
The newspapers were saying that it's likely that it's no longer going to be the same government but will be a change of government. And this was kind of within 3 or 4 weeks of the end of the auction. So people that were hesitating didn't show up for the auction, which meant the ones that did show up were just the ones that were looking for a good price, a bargain. Never sell when you have to sell. At that stage, I already made a few commitments and I knew I had to sell within that week anyway. Long story short, instead of hitting the absolute potential of $800,000 for the property, which we had three different prices for, thinking that, this is the estimate and we could hit that, et cetera. We took the wrong time to auction. And seeing 15 people there, I thought, okay, it wasn't that the real estate agent didn't advertise enough, because obviously there were people there, but just was the wrong time to sell. Now, if I would have waited another 2 years when the government was stable and there wasn't the impending change, the market was different. And it's not that property demand or property supply changed. It was only that people were more certain. It was only that it was just a good time to sell or a bad time to sell. Anyway, lesson number one, but I bought and I made a profit when I sold. So if I was to think of it just in numerical terms, I'd think, you know what, just such a small increase in value over so many years, I could have just kept my money in shares. I could have invested in something different. But think of it this way. I was living in the property. So if I was to add my rent and rent and rent and rent and think of that as money that disappeared, and then I compared what my interest rate was for the home loan again and again and again, and then I took the profit I made and compared that to lost rent, I was well ahead. So I knew that I made a profit between, if when I compared this from rent money and mortgage money to the profit that I made, even though it was nowhere near the $800,000 potential of the property, I was still better off than had I not taken any action. The other flip side was that I learned how to renovate. I learned how to rip up carpets again, not with me helping my parents do it, But this was the first
But you
time
doing it.
it was the first time that I did everything myself. New curtains, new flooring. I did pay a painter to do the painting because honestly, I think it would have taken me four times as long and probably cost the same amount.
Amir, did you do anything with the kitchen and bathroom in that property, that first one?
I took out anything that looked aged and just unscrewed it and re-screwed in something that looks new. So
Okay.
range hoods above the stovetop usually get yellow with age. So all I did was same plug, didn't change anything of the where the power plug was, but just unscrewed it and bought a $200 one and put a new one back in the same spot, same size.
Yes,
So just
yes.
cosmetically it looked different. The switches on the wall after the painting was
Yes.
finished. Big tip there, don't do it before you paint. But after the painting was finished, all I did was I unscrewed the little lids on the plastic
Over the
covers
top.
over the switches and just put new lids on them so they're white and not yellow. It's just those little things that you do without having to physically change any wiring or physically change the actual switch, but just the surrounding cover plates makes a massive difference. It really does.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was your first property, which you managed to make that nice profit on and learn that valuable information and those valuable tips about selling property. What was the next one?
Oh my God, that was the next one was almost around the corner. So it's still in Randwick, and I think it would have been around maybe 200 meters away. So like literally very, very close.
Oh.
If you were to go up the hill and turn right, you're there. And that property I purchased for 580, but I learned that there are some things that make a property more attractive and not just facing north and facing east. So of course I bought it in a
Yes.
block of units and I still wanted something that faced north and faced east and it did. And apart from ripping out the carpets, I actually added an extra wall.
Oh.
So you would think that a lot of renovators knock down walls to make things bigger. But I
Yes.
recognized that my target market was going to be somebody who wants to live in a unit. And this unit, when I found it, one of the big wows, apart from the location, apart from the aspect of the northeast, was the fact that the lounge room was an L-shaped lounge room that was like 11 meters long by 6 meters deep, so massive. But it took up almost the whole unit. The average lounge room is roughly twice the size of a bedroom. So if you think of your bedroom being a 3 by 3, 3 meters by 3 meters, we're not talking feet, so 3 foot by three
Yes.
foot is scary. 3 meters by 3 meters. So
Yes.
if your average bedroom is 3 meters by 3 meters, and you think a comfortable lounge room is 3 meters by 6 meters, that's a decent sized lounge
Yes.
room. But 11 meters by 6 meters is a waste of space. So I found a company that does shop fit outs. And the good thing there is
Oh.
that they're used to not making any structural changes, not making things that have to change the roof line or the supporting structure. They just use gyprock, which is a lightweight material, to simply screw into the walls, the floor, and the ceilings without wobble, and just putting in a sliding door or something that, again, doesn't require a lot of weight to it. So they came
Yes.
in without doing a structural renovation. They did the equivalent of a cosmetic renovation like they would inside of a shop. To do that in a two-bedroom unit meant that I had the usability of either a three-bedroom, and remember, this unit was full of
Yes.
windows. Every room, even this new room, had massive windows to it. But we chose to call it an office. So think of converting a two-bedroom unit with a 11-meter by
Two.
6-meter lounge room to something that had two bedrooms and a separate office with a closed door. Now,
Yes.
everybody these days in today's market is working from home or a very large percentage. Back in those days, when I was young and dinosaurs roamed, it
Nobody.
was very unlikely that someone was working from home. But just having that separate small office, home office in a spare room inside a unit was a bonus for somebody that perhaps worked in the city and wanted
Definitely.
a unit to live in, but also to do a little bit of work on their weekends or whatever. Without being disturbed by the TV, without feeling like they're working inside their bedroom. Once you've got a bed in the bedroom, there's not a lot of space. So unless you've
not
got
in a unit
bedroom, so unless you've got a triple size bedroom, you're missing that workspace. So I worked out who the market was. I worked out who's going to be looking at the renovation afterwards and deciding to buy it. And that little, the work that we did to put in that gyprock wall, I believe was between $7,500 and
$8,500.
So well, not a lot of money. Well under $10,000. But I bought for $580,000 and I sold for over $800,000. Why was that better? It was better because I wasn't in a rush to sell. So I could work out whether the newspapers were saying good things about property, whether the taxation department was saying good things about property. The one thing that I could control was how the property looked, the renovations, et cetera. Yes. Now, what I did learn in working for the company on my full-time work were kitchens, bathrooms, renovation, even white goods and ovens and stovetops was that if I was to change a benchtop to look like something more flashy, then perhaps I wouldn't need to rip out the whole kitchen, as in just replace the surface of it and cosmetically something looks brand new. So I went in for lots of measurements. I think I went to 17 different kitchen manufacturers to get quotes. And those 17 companies all had dramatically different ideas of what we could do. But what I decided to do was change the basin, the sink, change the stovetop from a gas one to an induction stovetop, which, yes, it's just electric, but it uses magnetism. What that means is you're not getting those twisted coils that looks aged, but you're getting a flat glass surface that has fancy circles on it. So when somebody comes for an inspection, so much easier to make that look clean. And let's face it, looks aren't everything, but if you've got five inspections on the day and you're walking in and 5 minutes you're out of that place, looks are the only thing you're going to remember. So I changed, changed the soap top, changed the bench top, ripped up the carpet and put in this new lightweight wall just to separate that 11-meter lounge room into a 2.5-meter by 3-meter room and then a big enough lounge room. And put a little window up top as well to make sure that the light still fills the lounge room. So we had lots of natural light. It sold very quickly and very easily. But then we used that money to move into the next property. And this is.
Tell me about the next one.
So I was getting to the stage where people were asking me to help do their renovations. And that's a lot of fun, as long as you get paid up front, because you never know when things are going to happen one way or the other.
Yes.
Photos of what I've done for myself in my previous properties, and now people are saying, look, you know, we're going to do the renovation ourselves, but we need you to come and lend a hand. Can you help us move stuff up, down? Can you help us with the design? So I came in and I did two or three different units in the eastern suburbs just to help friends and family out. What that taught me was that I can now invest in something where I see visually something that would scare the pants off somebody else. Three things that I knew, the three things that this all had in common in Randwick was that if you're buying an apartment unit, if you're buying something that has strata, check the books. Make sure that the strata has money in it. So the first investigation I always did was do the computer reading. Read now. This is another unit in Randwick.
Mm-hmm.
You were with me on the third one. And this one I chose to buy in a company name because I knew it wasn't the one I was going to live in, but it was going to be something where I could jump in, renovate, and realize the value very quickly without making a mistake of when to sell, because that's a catch that I learned. Right? You only make some mistakes once, and you learn from them because they hurt enough. Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say some of the key points just before we move on and talk a bit more about this property, that you talk about the north or north-facing aspect of a property. You talk about the ability to make small or easy cosmetic changes. And you talk about the knowledge of the actual suburb where you're buying. So those are some of the key things that you learned very early. The north aspect of a property, can you just quickly tell the audience why that's important? I know why that's important, but can you tell the audience And this is Australia. If you're in America, it's the southern aspect. Just to clarify.
If you live in Australia, you're in the southern hemisphere. What that means is the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, but all through the day, whether it's morning, midday or afternoon, it's always going to be on the north part of your house. So if you have a window that faces north, first thing in the morning, you get a little bit of light, and then at midday, you get the most light, and then at sunset, you get a little bit of light. What that means is that your room's never fully in shadow. You always have something that gives you that natural light in the house. A lot of people like in, whether it's a unit or a house, having bedrooms that face east. Why? Because it helps you get up in the morning. If you had a western-facing house and the light was lighting up your bedrooms in the afternoon or early evening,
yes,
your bedroom would feel hot and it would be harder to sleep. If you had an east-facing, and even in winter or in summer, your room started to warm up quite early on in the day, it's an incentive to get out of bed, isn't it?
Yes. So they're good points when you're searching for property, aren't they, Amir?
If it's a unit, yeah. If it's a house, you can really move bedrooms around. You can move lounge rooms around. You can do a lot more practically if you're owning a freestanding house, especially with extensions or with knocking down walls or building walls in a house. In a unit, you're pretty much locked into where they've put the plumbing originally. So if they have the pipes for the gas and for the water and for the drainage and for the regular plumbing in one part of the in one corner, it's unlikely that you'll pay somebody.
It's tricky.
It's unlikely you'll pay somebody to move it to the other side of the house because it's you have to get permission from the people under you. And if you're going to do anything on the outside of the house, people will vote on it. So, yeah, it's just it's tricky, it's expensive, and you might just get a flat-out no.
Yes, because it's not up to you. It's up to a group of people. And this is units we're talking about.
Exactly.
So, Amir, back to our story. You were through this next property and you had people starting to ask for your expertise. What happened then?
So imagine walking into a north-facing unit with lots of light, but it was a unit with the absolute minimum ceiling height you're allowed to do. And from the ceiling, you have five chandeliers. So this isn't a very high ceiling castle. It's not a ornate 3 meter or 3.5 meter ceiling. You're talking the 2.4 meters that are the absolute minimum
and
stretch.
And chandeliers.
Chandelier hanging off. Five chandeliers in a little two bedroom unit. Wow.
Okay. That is a wow, isn't it?
Easy to fix. But remember what I learned. I learned that the strata report is possibly more important than the condition. Because through experience, I knew I could rip things out, put things in, change a light fitting, send an electrician in to unscrew something and just put in an oyster light, something that was less intrusive. That was, okay, that was a given. I've seen it on TV. I've seen it on YouTube. Okay, easy. If you are on that auction day with me, I came in with numbers from the strata. It was a 409-page strata report that, yes, I read every page. I flicked through most of them because I could see they weren't relevant, but I read some very interesting reports on what was fixed in other units in the same block. So imagine walking in with me. I'm standing there in carpet that had dust coming off it. The original carpet was circa 1970, meaning that when it was first installed, it was around 1970. Maybe back in 1970, it used to be a shag pile. Now it had trenches. What do I mean by that? I mean, you could see the regular path that people were walking from the couch to the kitchen worn through the carpet. So you could see a different level of carpet in the trenches. Wow.
Wow.
That wouldn't faze you, would it, Tony?
Well, you can always remove carpet. It's removable, yes.
So now I'm dressed in builder's clothes. What do I mean? Steel cap boots. Long trousers, but more than a few splashes of paint on them. and a hoodie that I use whenever I do renovation work. And I'm standing in a room of 20 people in Randwick on an auction day.
Yeah.
Who would like to start the bidding? There was the gentleman in the front wearing a suit and tie and obviously had a lot more energy than the other suits in the room. If you can imagine, big balcony doors, open and wide, letting in the fresh air of the springtime. You can hear the splashing from the pool downstairs. Little kids are playing. You can hear birds flying by with palm trees. As soon as you look out the balcony, you can see palm trees through the sliding doors. Beautiful, gorgeous area. Middle of Randwick, great location. Facing north.
Yeah.
Some east, some west, but mostly north aspect. Lots of light coming in. Ticks the boxes so far. Read the strata report. Yes. The strata report looks great. Now, this is where you'll love. Pay attention to this. There was a crack that went from the worn-out carpet, floor to ceiling. The whole wall had a massive crack, and it wasn't something just crack went all the way through. And from one of the bedrooms, you could see light coming through the crack. That's right. You could see light from the other side of the wall coming through the crack. That means it was a proper surface crack, proper crack. So 20 people, some dressed in suits. You could tell they were the real estate agents. The auctioneer standing in the focal point of the room, on top of this dusty carpet, but the air outside made it seem as if there was potential for it to be converted into a luxurious apartment, or at the very least, clean and dust-free.
Yes.
Through the whole campaign, we've been talking about this unit being between 800 or high, eight, maybe mid-eights, 800,000. Who would like to start the bidding? Now, if you did the research like I did, you'd notice that the last six units in the same block sold between 800 and 920. So these guys weren't just numbers out of thin air. This was based on research. If I used the old method that I used to use, which was going onto the internet and doing my research, I'd come up with the same numbers. But I knew a little more.
I see.
Have you ever been in a room where you felt that you did enough homework to be able to be certain? Have you ever been in that situation where you just had that confidence in yourself? That confidence in yourself.
Yes.
So imagine the bidding. The bidder's asking for 800,000 or somewhere around that. I could see the other six people with paddles in their hand, and they were the registered bidders. So you could tell just by looking around, it doesn't matter whether somebody's dressed in smart casual, whether they're in a suit, or whether they're just dressed like me as builders. With the bidding pattern. If they're not bidders, they're not there. They're just spectators. They're probably the next door neighbors, just curious.
Curious.
So the six people that had bidding cards around me, I knew that I had some competition in front of me. 400,000. The auctioneer took a beat and said, I'm sorry, through the whole campaign, we've been explaining, and I'm sure the real estate agents here did a great job of giving you the expectation that this property should be selling at over the 800. So if there's any bid closer to the 700, we're happy to accept that, but I'm afraid I can't start at that. Is there anybody else willing to bid higher? Nobody answered. Out of the 20 people in the room, number six, like me, with bidder's card, nobody could miss the big crack in the wall. So it doesn't matter what the other units saw. There's no way a unit in the same building, would sell for as much as the others. And the real estate agents. After a few glances and a few speeches from the auctioneer trying to push up how valuable this location is, how great the parking is, how much it comes with, how everybody else is happy, how it should sell for this to this, he finally accepted my bid. said, right, we'll start at 400,000, but I can tell you now that this unit will sell for more than that. So if you're here and you're serious and you want to walk away owning this property, make sure you put a bid higher than that. We're starting at 400. Do I have anything higher than 400,000? The next few seconds were silent. Then another sales speech explaining why it's so valuable, why this location is great, how eastern suburbs will always grow, how this is an investment in the future, how you can't go wrong with property because there'll always be somebody who needs a roof over their head. I'm sure you've heard that all before, Tony. Would I be right?
Yes, I have. Indeed. The talk up.
Finally, a gentleman from the other side of the room raised his bidder's card. I would like to raise $10,000. The auctioneer thought for a second. I think at this stage, the vendor would like to make his vendor's bid, and the vendor's bid will be $700,000. Would anybody like to raise $700,000? The British gentleman at the other end of the room said, oh, no, I'll offer just the 10,000 above what that gentleman said, 410,000. I'm sorry, sir, we can't accept that. We are now at 700,000. And this continued with another sales speech trying to get everybody up to what they would love to get for a unit with a broken wall. Let's cut maybe 10 minutes out of this. The auction's now over, and I was the highest bidder at 400,000. So they invited me. And when I say they, I mean the suits. So think about this. I'm sitting now in a room. Everybody else who was a next-door neighbor or another bidder has left. Yeah. I'm surrounded by five people trying to sell this unit. The auctioneer left. He gave the paperwork over to the real estate agents and said, well, this is the highest bidder. Negotiate away. Walked out. And I'm sitting surrounded by five real estate agents trying to convince me that I should pay more for this unit. Have you ever felt outnumbered?
Yes, I can imagine that. I
didn't feel outnumbered. I can honestly say I didn't feel outnumbered. Why? Because before the auction started, when I was still in my own house, I took my whiteboard out and I wrote the reasons why that unit needs work. So I itemized the things that need to be repaired, and I wrote it on my whiteboard, and I wrote a price on the whiteboard that I believed meant value, and if you add the renovation cost to that value, you'd get about $750,000. So I came up with $637,500. Very specific number.
Yes.
And the buying enthusiasm was that the real estate agents were trying to sell from 800 to 850. They knew they were going to get the record for the building at 920 something, just like the other unit above it. But they were hoping for between 800 and 850, and you can tell that through the auction. I wrote in my whiteboard $637,500. What do you think I bought that property for?
Exactly that.
Correct. Exactly, $637,500. I had, before the auction, I had my electrician, my plumber, my carpenter come in and inspect to see how much they can quote me for them to fix up the bits that I want. I wanted the chandeliers gone. I wanted oyster lights. I wanted the kitchen ripped out, a new kitchen. So I estimated how much it's going to cost to do all the bits and pieces with the carpenter installing and putting a new bench top, etc. My figures that I didn't tell the real estate agents, but the figures that I could do it for, not if I was going to buy a brand name kitchen manufacturer, not if I was going to pay something to do a full renovation, not if I needed to knock down a wall and rebuild a wall, but how I could patch it up with my money meant that the strata, the people that were paying to upkeep the building, would pay for that big crack to be fixed. They would pay for it.
I was thinking that earlier, and I'm thinking, now wouldn't the strata have to fix if it's an external crack on the building or goes out to the building? Isn't that their responsibility? It is, isn't it?
It is, but this was an internal crack. So the only thing that gave me confidence was that when I read the 409-page strata report, I could see that the unit above and to the left of me had a very similar issue. And the crack in the wall was not caused by the person living there, but caused by the metal inside the concrete not being sealed properly in 1970 when they built the building, which meant that in the last two cases, when somebody asked for it to be repaired, the body corporate, the strata, the group where the money was sitting, and remember, I checked how much was in the account, and it was over $400,000 in the account. They would pay for the renovation, not new floors, not new paint, but for the structure. So I knew that strata would cover the structural cost, which meant that $100,000 to $150,000 that would cost me to do if I was paying for it, I didn't even have to touch that. I just needed to wait for it to be finished.
Yes.
So I estimated that apart from the structural stuff that needs to be fixed, my out-of-pocket expense would be $30,000 for a renovation. What do I mean by that? I mean the same thing that I've done two, three, four, five times before. Rip up the carpet, put in new switches, put in new light globes, and put in new Oyster lights. Really simple stuff, and a new kitchen. But we're talking about a flat-packed kitchen that just fits. In other words, you don't need to spend $50,000 on a kitchen if the other units around it have a 50-year-old kitchen. So without overextending myself, I estimated that the cost would be $30,000. I won for $637,500. When the invoices came back after all my work is finished, the budget was $30,000 and we had spent $30,500. So very, very close to budget. What that meant was I put it on the market in the same year that I bought it. So I settled on the property in January. I sold it in September. Why September? Because I learned that there's good times to sell, and when you're not in a rush, you work out when spring comes. Why? Because if the enthusiasm's there, if people are reading in the newspapers that it's a good time to buy, it's on your side. It just helps you. We sold the property in 9 days, put it on the market. Within 1 week, we had several offers. We accepted, signed, and got paid within 9 days. 9 days we had somebody who paid a deposit against.
Phenomenal.
How much? We bought for $637, we sold for $820.
Oh, fantastic. And so so that was that problem. And all the time you're learning about the tricks of the trade and how to really leverage good property that might need work and get good return on it. So what's the next thing you do? What's the next property, Amir?
So from that really came the fact that confidence wins a lot. Research wins a lot. Predictability wins a lot. Now, when you combine predictability, research, and confidence, and you take action, because without implementation, knowledge is just academic. You can learn a bunch of things, but they're not making you money until you're actually putting your own money in the game. So I learned that taking action has its rewards. And even the worst experience I've had so far, I've made some gain. Yes. It was better than just renting and waiting. So I guess a lot of the fear went away because I knew that it can be forgiving, especially if you're not in an urgent, forced sale. If you're not doing a fire sale where you must clear everything in one go, if you've got patience and you can work out what you think the next person who wants to buy the property is going to look for, it's predictable. Yes. But implement. Put action against it. And when you do it the right way, you put action against it, and you do that with a predetermined plan. So don't just don't just go with emotion and try to do everything yourself. Don't take the word of what the real estate agents are going to tell you it's worth and what the potential. Do your own research. You can come up with results like I've had. Now, I've said this before in our last interview, Tony, but I'll say this again just as a disclaimer. Just because it's happened in the past isn't a guarantee for future results. And just because I was able to do it for myself isn't a guarantee that you'll be able to do it for yourself. So a disclaimer here, it's only general information and this is not specific information to your circumstance. So please reach out to me if you do need help with investing. if you want to have a chat about what the real estate market looks now and what
Yes.
the next few years can bring to you, but not guaranteed. So absolutely, I'm happy to answer those questions, Tony. Now, let me tell you, if we've still got time, about the
we
next
have. Thing that happens. Yes, we've got enough time to tell the next one.
So imagine yourself now in a situation where you've decided that you've ripped out enough carpets and you've painted enough walls and you've renovated enough so you're confident in allowing somebody else to have the fun. You're confident now being able to hire somebody to do the jobs that need to be done with a scope of works that you write up. So instead of doing everything yourself, of course, we all have the option of paying an expert to do that. So I reached out to some of my connections in the financial planning field. You touched on this earlier, Tony. My first start into this was through research at one of the big four banks in Australia of how to be a financial planner, how to be a financial planner, how to analyze, how to read numbers. But I kept a lot of my friends from back in the day, which meant that when I was looking for my next investment property, I wanted to do it by the numbers. I decided that I wanted to invest in something that I'm buying and right now it has a positive rental income. Why? Because I didn't want to keep working 60 or 70 hours a week, and I knew that working my full-time job was always going to be 45 to 50 hours. I never picked the kind of starting jobs that had that 30-hour-a-week option where you start exactly on time, and you leave exactly on time, and you get your 45-minute lunch break. Those kind of jobs didn't excite me. So I always went for the kind of jobs that were a bit more managerial, supervision, or at least required more enthusiasm than just clock in, clock out, and do your job. For better or worse, that was always my story. So when I was looking for investment properties, I wanted the return to be, on my whiteboard at least,
positive.
Something that would give me a positive income, which meant that the time and research and hiring people to fix or renovate was worthwhile.
Yes.
I spoke to one of my friends who was a financial planner in Sydney. They said, well, Amir, you said you didn't want to invest in New South Wales again. Why? I explained that the way my portfolio is looking is a mixture of things. I want to diversify. I don't want to have all my eggs in one basket. And also, I'm looking for something that gives me better results than the Sydney results. Because if I'm getting 6% return rental, and I'm talking net after all the costs, if I'm getting a 6% net return, or if I'm getting an 8% net return, that's pretty much the top of the Sydney market or the top of the New South Wales market. But I knew from my research that there are some cities and some towns in Australia that had so many jobs in it and that had the kind of research that showed future projections of growth in the business, the education, the entertainment, the schooling.
Yes.
B-E-E-S. Spells bees, doesn't it? We'll come back to
it
that.
It does. Yes.
I knew from my research that there are some great places scattered around different states in Australia that had infrastructure, investment, that were going somewhere and that weren't reliant on one type of industry, that weren't reliant on one type of company, that weren't thinking of, you know, yes, we'll build this and we'll have thousands of jobs while we're building, but then once it's built, those people leave.
No jobs afterwards. Yeah.
So I looked at it. I researched. And the financial planner said to me, well, I've been on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram, and I've made some friends with real estate agents that are out of town. One of them was the best one in a specific town in Western Australia. So I don't want to name the companies I worked for because that's kind of irrelevant, but I can say this. Danielle in Port Hedland is remarkable. So if you're doing a search for real estate and you're looking for a real estate agent, and
in
I don't
Western
get
into this,
this is just a testimonial from my own experience. In Western Australia, in a little town called Port Hedland, there's an incredible lady called Danielle, and my financial planner recommended that I ring Danielle and just see what's on the market, specifically where I can get double digit rental returns. What do I mean by double digit? It means 10% or more rent against the purchase price. Within 3 hours, Tony, I found a place that I made an offer with through Danielle.
So Danielle was representing
the seller. She was selling this property. And in Western Australia, you can make a bid. And if your bid is successful, it's a contract. You can exchange. You can pay a deposit, etc. So I checked the rules first to make sure that I didn't put my foot in where it just doesn't belong. But once I checked the rules,
yeah,
properties, and I knew what was important to me, the location, the type of bad quality that needs renovation, the place that was close to jobs but also had other attractions around it. And I found a property in Danielle's database that was advertised on the internet but was around 100 metres from three supermarkets, Coles, Aldi, Woolworths, about 100 metres from the beach, and very close, when I say very close, about a 15-minute drive to an international airport. So if somebody was working from overseas or going overseas, or if they could afford the kind of money to fly in and out of that town, they didn't need to fly to a capital city first and then fly out. But the airport there, or 15 minutes from the house, was far enough to not hear noise, because you don't want to live right next to the airport, but close enough so that the town could support growth in the future. And I found this beautiful duplex. And I say beautiful in inverted commas.
Amir's beautiful?
Potentially beautiful? Diamond in the rough? Hmm. I choose your own bumper sticker here. But imagine this.
Yeah.
100 metres from the beach, 100 metres from supermarkets, 100 metres from cafes. Not a luxurious place, but 860 square metres with two separate, I think it was a four-bedroom and a three-bedroom, that were both, a three-bedroom and a two-bedroom, that were both rented at the same time to two different families or two different tenants.
Yes.
So the estimated price that the real estate agent was quoting was between $230 and $250. And by the time I reached Danielle, two other people had already made an offer between that $230 and $250. So I thought about what I have to give. What is it that I can offer? Because I didn't want to spend more money on it. And the rental return was around $450 a week. So at $450,000, that would be about a 5% return.
But that's right.
10% return, which means double that. So what does that gross return come to? Divided by 225, if my maths is correct. So I knew my limit, if I wanted to do this correctly, was $225,000. So I think we spent about five phone calls backwards and forwards, and I spoke to a few people who were estimating things for me. I had a look at the building inspection that came from a local builder, so I would need to fly out and do the important stuff. I had a look at what the council was doing, what infrastructure programs are happening in the near term. And I made an offer in writing to Danielle of $200,000.
Yes.
So now my third lowest. So the other two were between $230 and $250. Mine was lower than the other two. Allegedly, I didn't see the offers. I'm taking the real estate agent's word for it. Let's just say that they were higher than mine.
Mm.
What I offered was a 14-day settlement. Thinking, okay, I'm selling. The owner is thinking to themselves, I'm selling a property. I've got three offers, but I actually want the money. I don't want the excitement. I want the definiteness of, yes, it's in my account. So I offered 14 days, and my offer was. They accepted my offer pretty much because I said I could do it in 14 days. And they went to their bank and said, yes, we've found the let's get us out of the mortgage. We want to close off the loan. The bank said, oh, we can't do it that quick. It's going to take us 6 weeks. So I ended up settling on the property in 6 weeks anyway. But I offered I was capable. And that meant that I bought for $200,000, I bought a property that was rented for $450 a week.
Mm, well done.
18 months, few things changed in Port Hedland. More jobs arrived. There was big announcements from five mining companies around Australia that were all going to use a new train station in that area. There was redevelopment of a marina in the area. There was going to be tens of millions of dollars of investment to build up a luxurious little rental and holiday area and luxury resort, etc. All this wasn't around when I first researched, but you know what? The location and the proximity to an airport meant that
of
it had
course.
The opportunity to, if somebody chose to do something in the future, and it happened within 12 months, 18 months. So what does that mean? I rang Danielle, didn't I? I said, okay, what is it going to take to sell this property straight away? And she said, oh, we've got buyers. That's not a problem. I said, okay, I want to sell it for $300,000. I bought it for $200,000 about a year and a bit ago. I want to sell it for $300,000. She said, well, I don't know, but I can put it up. I can put it on the marketing. I can put it on the websites, see what we have, what happens. I said, okay, well, let's do this. I've got a list of things that I think would improve the property. Can you, as the local agent, organize somebody to give full quotes for all these little bits and pieces that need to be done? And we found a builder. We found somebody that could do pest inspections, put termite traps around it. In the northern part of Australia, there's little things that you have to consider. Every house thinks about cyclones and high wind storms. Every house thinks about termites and risks to flooding, etc. So to get it from the level that I bought it at to the level that somebody else is going to say yes to it, I knew it was going to require a bit of negotiation. So I said to Danielle, okay, do me a favor. Let's put a buffer. Let's put a little gap between what we advertise it at and what I'm happy with, which is $300,000. And Danielle said, okay, well, that's quite a big gap. I said, okay, well, let's just advertise like this. Within 2 weeks, she had several offers, one of which we accepted for $350,000. And the list of to-dos on the 350,000 job, I knew was going to cost about $50,000. So my solicitor and the buyer solicitor got together and put that in writing and said in the contract, okay, we'll buy it, we'll deposit now, but we'll only settle once you finish all the work you promised on. And I said, okay, no problem. I transferred from the $350,000 they were paying, at least 50, I think maybe even 60, was held by the solicitor until all the work was finished. As the contract said, we ended up keeping about $295,000 out of that $350,000. So that means that within a year or so, we bought for $200,000 and sold for $300,000.
Fantastic. Amelia, these wonderful real estate stories are amazing. This week, we are completely out of time yet again, but we'll be back next week to talk about more of the learnings from Mia and his journey in real estate, because these tips and information are critical if you want to use real estate to increase your wealth, increase your portfolio, and live a different lifestyle. And we're going to be talking a bit more about that when we get back in future shows. Amelia, Michelle, thank you so much for being on the show today. We look forward to the next show next week. And that, my friends, is your lot for this week. Bye for now.